The Guardian.
Football Weekly with James Richardson.
Twas the night before Christmas. All was still in the house. Not a creature was stirring, except for Chelsea with their Christmas case of 8 too much. Sir Alex Taggart with his case of attempted murder. Harry Redknapp blasting small clubs for overspending on players. What's next? Criticising managers for poor enunciation and math skills? And Jose Mourinho, apocalypse moo, as he drops a bomb by dropping Casillas. We'll be talking about all of that, plus a little bit of Roma smashing Milan and the winds of the north. On Saturday, we've got posts, tweets and much, much more in today's special pre-Christmas Football Weekly. Hey, and off we go. In the pod today, we've got Jacob Steinberg.
Hello, James.
Hi, Jacob. We've got Raphael Honigstein.
Hello.
Hi, Raphael. And we've got no one else. There is no third guest, but we don't need it. Because the third guest is football. Absolutely. And what a weekend of football it's been. Raphael Honigstein. So many big, big stories. Few bigger than the extraordinary score line at Stamford Bridge. As Chelsea creamed Villa 8-0.
Yeah. I'm not they sure scored. That was the verb I was looking for in the description of that game.
But, what verb do you want?
I don't know. Smashed.
Smashed.
Annihilated.
Hammered. Steamrollered.
Yeah.
Killed. They scored more goals than 17 of the other Premier League teams put together.
It was a very low scoring weekend, yeah. If it hadn't been for Chelsea, who made up. Villa, they've been really fairly decent in recent weeks, and perhaps we overlook the fact that they are very fragile and very prone to letting in goals at the other end, because they've got this fairly exciting young setup going forward, but on the other hand, at the other side of the pitch, not that great.
All right, but Chelsea, Torres, 14 goals now this season, 6 goals in 5 games under Benitez. He even did a little cheeky Rabona.
Yeah, I wasn't convinced by the apparent resurgence of Fernando Torres when he scored against Norwich and Sunderland and then against Monterrey in the Club World Cup. But that was a really, really good goal yesterday. Probably his best goal that he scored for Chelsea, I think. And it just kind of set the tone for the whole game. I think it lifted a bit of the pressure, because I think there was a bit of pressure after losing the game against Corinthians, the final. It was another big game that Benitez had not done well in. He'd won kind of the easy games and then had struggled in the harder ones. And obviously this wasn't one of the harder ones, but it just kind of just lifted the whole mood inside Stamford Bridge. And from there, Aston Villa really didn't get a look in at all.
Was there any kind of Benitez acclaim or recognition at the end?
I don't think so. I still think it's going to take a lot more, which is a bit unfair. I like Benitez, though, saying that in classic Benitez style, he didn't really praise the win. He said, we can still do a lot better. There are things that I've seen that we can improve on.
Mm. I don't think, whatever happens, I don't think they'll ever really warm to him. I don't think it's about results. I don't think it's about them saying, we don't rate him as a manager. He has to win more. You know, he's not winning enough. I think it's a purely sort of personal animosity. And, so a bit like Avram Grant, although less pronounced. If Avram Grant would have won a Champions League, people still wouldn't have sung his name. And I think whatever Benitez will do, maybe there won't be the rougher out signs, but there won't be the rougher in signs either.
Hmm. Has there been a marked effect? This was obviously a huge result, but do we buy into the thing, not just for Torres, but the rest of the team, that it's actually smaller teams that these results are coming against? And the big games, as Rupert Crane, for example, tweeting in, when it's really been an important match, City, West Ham, Corinthians, he hasn't been able to have that effect.
I think the one of the big changes he's had is putting, yesterday we saw David Luiz in central midfield, which is something that I've wanted to see for a while as well. I'm not really convinced by him as a defender. I think that he's built his reputation really on his ability on the ball. I don't think he can really defend. And yesterday he played really well, although again you want to see it against a better side.
The other thing about moving him into midfield is you get Ivanovic in the middle as well.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Anything else we liked? Moses, he's playing more under Benitez.
He is, and you could argue that he gives them more balance because they've been just a little bit too technical and too small and too sort of non-physical with the front three that they had before. And I think for the Premier League, Rafa is always about controlling the game, and his great explanation for not winning the league with Liverpool was that saying that you can control games in Europe, but you can't control them in the Premier League, because at one stage all tactical discipline goes out the window and people just throw man forward and long balls, etc. And I think he's he's learned from that a little bit by bringing, you know, like playing players that not necessarily best players, but maybe better suited to do a specific job. I'm not convinced that David Luiz is a central midfielder, but I think it was a good idea to play him here because obviously Villa were going to operate with lots of long balls, knockdowns, and he's the perfect guy to just pick them up, almost drop in a little bit like Busquets to play a third centre-back when they haven't got the ball. I don't think his positional discipline is good enough to play.
But he could learn that.
I don't know.
You can develop that.
I don't know. If he's struggling as a centre-back, which is a much easier position to play in.
Is it? But it's just a smaller margin for error, isn't it?
Smaller margin for error, but you run a lot less. If you're caught out of position as a centre-back, you're really doing something very, very wrong. Whereas as a central midfielder, it takes a lot more knowing it's where also, to go.
Just that he seems to drift into that position anyway, so it might just be better to start him off there.
Yeah, but if he drifts in centre midfield, he's going to hurt the team even more because, you know, you drift as a centre back, you're the last line of defence, which is very, very bad. But chances are somebody before you will still be in a position to do something about it. Mm. As a centre midfielder, if you
you drift, there's someone behind you to do it.
Yeah, but
I'm up front.
Logic
or on the bench?
He's a good player.
All right then. Now Villa will try and bounce back from that, and my word, they must be rock bottom today after being at the wrong end of that 8-0 scoreline, after getting their hopes up with those fine performances. But they will be hosting Spurs on Boxing Day. Spurs, who are fresh from a 0-0 draw with Stoke, while Chelsea will be at Norwich. Good. Norwich away. Is that the kind of test that would make you believe, stroke not believe, more in Benitez and his team and Torres?
Yeah, well, Norwich have been on a great run. They lost on Saturday, but it was the first time, I think, in 10 or 11 games that they had done.
Yep.
And they've beaten Arsenal and United at Carrow Road. It's a really horrible place to go. It's atmospheric, it's boisterous inside the ground.
Sounds terrible.
Yeah, no, but it's just the fans get right on top of you. It's very tight, it's hard to play, and he's just developing a really good side there. I like what's going on at Norwich. So I wouldn't be surprised if they didn't come away with the win, Chelsea.
Right. And you should really get extra points for a big win, shouldn't you, really? I mean, an 8-0, but you should get more than three points.
You always say you don't like it when teams properly go for it.
No, I don't know. I can understand. No, I didn't say I didn't like it.
You
I probably
said goals
did
were
say.
Overrated.
You're right. No, that wasn't me.
I think that was
the other
you,
fella.
Wasn't it?
No, that was the other fella. Now, it's a fair point you make. I have in the past erred towards the continental view that sometimes it's better to back off and
is it gauche?
Yeah, maybe to riff on someone else's pain.
I think it's only an Italian view, not a continental view.
Is that so?
In Spain, if you humiliate the opposition, that's really good.
Okay.
And in Germany, people say, oh, yeah.
Cool. What does that mean?
Just, yeah.
Right, okay, good. So, but anyway, Chelsea, they only get 3 points. Might as well have just won 1-0 and left it at that. And
title was won on goal difference last season.
Oh, Jacob. Mm. That's exactly the point. Do you think Chelsea... No.
No.
Stop me from saying it. But could... No, no.
No, but... But
11 points there.
Manchester away. United, when they played Sunderland last week, they battered them for about an hour and they only won 3-1. And Ferguson was annoyed that they didn't properly go for it. And that's what Chelsea did yesterday. And that's what City kept on doing last season. That's why they won the league.
All right. Now, speaking of batterings and Man United, hey, Swansea Man United 1-1. Man United dropping points. Their lead shaved to 4 now at the top of the Premier League. But it's all about Ashley Williams and his astonishing, brutal.
Murder attempt.
R.I.P. RVP.
Exactly. But no, he was all right.
Oh, was he all right?
Yeah. Astonishingly, medical science still puzzled by how he managed to survive onslaught of ball to head. To be fair, it's probably not the safest thing in the world, having a ball smacked into your head. The first question would be, did he mean it?
Absolutely, yeah. 100%.
Good. All right. Excellent. And AK47 says, did anybody else notice Swansea's, I think it was Chico Flores, from the sly trip on Robin Van Persie just as he was getting up. As he gets up enraged to lay into Ashley Williams, Chico Flores, who's looking the other way, just slyly sticks out his foot to trip him so he can't quite. It was magnificent teamwork. Andy Rudge, if Robin Van Persie could have been killed, is Fergie admitting to attempted murder with his boot at Beckham's head incident in 2003?
That was
shout.
Just completely accidental.
Right, okay. Michael Cox, 10 successful blocks in Swansea against Man United. 7 were by Ashley Williams. So he's lucky to still be alive. says zonalmarking.net. All fair points. Well done, Swansea.
Yeah, I mean, it was really exciting to see them sort of making these last-ditch tackles and desperate defending at the end, but they were very, very open, and, you know, they really should have lost that game. I mean, they were exciting going forward at times. They played with a bit of belief, but, I mean, half of the time it was 4-4, 3-3, and, you know, how United didn't win this game is almost beyond me. And
Rooney was shocking, wasn't he?
Rooney was very poor.
When he's bad, I don't think I've anyone seen anyone have stinkers like him. It was the amount of times he went through and he didn't give the pass to Van Persie or whoever else. It was quite astonishing, really. Mm.
And it was interesting because, you know, Swansea have this reputation for keeping possession, for playing this wonderful football. And you saw that in stages, but half of the time they were just very, very undisciplined defensively, and which is really strange because Laudrup has come in saying, you know, we want to be a lot less naive, we want to defend much better. He's sort of come in with an agenda of being more efficient at both sides of the pitch. They're a little bit more direct. He says, you know, possession is overrated. This wasn't like that because it was almost like, you know, let's attack them and see where we can go. And then, you know.
Well, his hand forced a little bit by the fact that United took the lead, huh?
Yeah, but now after the equaliser in the second half, they were so open. Now, that was the really surprising thing because you're thinking, you know, you're at home, it's 1-1 against United, you know, just play a little bit deeper, try to use Michu. They can play a counter-attacking style, but they threw so many men forward. It was always either parity or even one or two more United players going at them at the other end. And I can understand why Ferguson is so upset because this is the kind of game, you know, you look back at the season and you think, you know, maybe one or two points are missing. Those points shouldn't have been dropped.
Right. Well, United are going to be hosting Newcastle on Boxing. I don't know if that lights your fire, Rafa.
It's probably the tie of the other round. Yeah.
Really?
I mean, Newcastle have been letting us down a little bit relatively to their great performances last season. But they were also so exciting to watch. I remember seeing them at Stamford Bridge when they won with these fantastic goals from...
last season. Cissé, the amazing, bendy ball thing.
Yeah. And you just don't get it this year, not getting that. Sadly. But I think
they've got a terrible record.
Could give them a good game.
Well. Yeah, terrible record. In the meantime, Reading will be hosting Swansea, a Reading side who really rubbished our expectations with their game at Man City. A City win. This would only just. There's such a thing as a moral victory. Was this kind of a moral draw, if you like, for Reading? Beaten right at the death by a slightly controversial
moral defeat. They didn't get the draw.
It would have been a moral draw. Like, you have a moral victory when you don't actually get the victory, but it's like a moral victory.
Right.
Yeah, this is a moral draw, that's what I'm saying.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's probably a moral victory as well.
Oh, do you think?
Well, there's no differences there between the two.
But there's plenty of difference. I'm going to move on, though, for everyone's sake. Listen, what happened was Federici...
I would say it was a moral defeat for City.
Right.
I mean, yes, they show great spirit and they're making great play about the fact that they didn't give up and they got the win, and it was great in the sense that it got the result. And, you know, if you take United's example, who didn't get the result, they got it and everything else would be forgotten. But the performance was actually very, very poor. It was a bit like watching eight Rooneys out there for City.
Eight Rooneys.
From what I saw.
That'd be a great movie.
Very lethargic and sort of off their game, and nothing really came off. And the atmosphere was so flat. I thought there might be some protest going on or
something. It always is flat there.
It was incredible.
They never sell out apart from against United, and even in the Champions League games.
They never sold out because they sold out, I think, Jacob, as a fan, I would say.
Well, they weren't selling out before, though.
Controversial.
Right.
They never filled that stadium.
But did Federici have an absolutely outstanding game, or what happened?
Not really.
No?
There weren't a lot of chances, a lot of saves for him to make, a few near misses here and there. And then right at the end, Gareth Barry, that controversial goal where he climbed all over Nicky Shorey to head it in.
Yes.
Or Shirley, as one BBC pundit called him on Twitter.
He made Shorey his Shirley. Yeah.
There's only so many times you can kind of play like that and get away with it, I think, and get that last-minute goal.
You mentioned the controversy, though, Jacob.
United have been doing it for 20 years.
There do seem to be two schools of thought on this. One, that it was a foul and the goal should never have stood, and certainly Brian McDermott very much of that opinion. It was wrong, plain wrong, as he said afterwards. The other is that Nicky Shorey just should have stood up and should have challenged for the ball, should have made a better job of being a defender.
I saw a picture of him, of it today, as Barry's sort of climbing all over him, and it just kind of looks conclusive that it was a foul, that he's got his hands on his shoulders and he's used him to get the leverage.
That's Jacob's view. Rafa?
Well, my view is, first of all, as a defender, you have to take into account what league you're playing in. And I think you need to be aware that in the Premier League, 9 out of 10 times, someone's climbing over you, even with some hands, the referee is going to let it go. And I think in this particular case, the referee was right to let it go, because one guy was trying to get the ball, the other just didn't do anything. If anything, was backing in, which also can be considered a foul. You never see, obviously, penalties for someone backing in, but if you're obstructing someone who wants to get to the ball, I don't think you should be afforded any benefit if then that, you know, that guy gets to the ball with maybe somehow sort of questionable, dubious methods. And I think he has to do something. He can't just wait and hope for the referee to blow the whistle. That's not the way to defend it.
Right, fair enough. James Horncastle pointing out that since the start of the last Premier League season, Man City, have scored 23 goals in the 85th minute or later. No other clubs. That's almost twice as many as any other club. Wow, it's a lot, isn't it? Well, I mentioned the fact that Reading will be hosting Swansea. Sunderland, meantime, will get a visit from Man City on Boxing Day. And very shortly, we'll be speaking to you, Jacob, about your experiences watching Sunderland on Saturday. Thanks for sticking with us, listeners. Here comes part two, which begins with Jacob Steinberg in Southampton. The scene, a drizzly Saturday in late December.
It was drizzly, yeah. Yeah. But very mild, actually, though.
Really? Down by the south coast? Yeah, yeah. Lovely.
Yeah, I had the pleasure of seeing the Guardian nominated 85th best player in the world, Emmanuel Mayuka.
Right, this just in. Hulk is 85. Mayuka is 87.
87th best player in the world.
Right. Yeah. This is the Guardian's 100 best players stylings, yeah? How did he fare on Saturday, then?
He was taken off after about 50 minutes. Right. He was in his first league start.
Okay. Well, it was a win, of course. A badly needed win for Sunderland.
Yeah, they don't really do a lot apart from hope that Stephen Fletcher scores and then they defend. And that's what happened on Saturday. And that was enough to beat Southampton, which I think would be really, really worrying for Nigel Adkins. That's the kind of game where when you're struggling that you have to win. And where if you look back and you've gone down, you think, well, that is one of the reasons that we went down. You don't beat Sunderland at home.
Right. And lost at home to Wigan as well.
They lost at home to Wigan. They were winning against Norwich at home and they gave away a stupid goal and they drew 1-1. They were winning against Swansea at home, gave away a stupid goal, drew 1-1. They were beating Fulham at home. Fulham are terrible away from home and they drew 2-2. That's 15 points that they've let go. Well, 12 points. They've picked up 3 points from those 5 games. And really, you're looking at it and you need probably 10 points, I think, from that if you're trying to stay up. And I although they're still in a good position, relatively they're outside of the relegation zone on goal difference, I just that was the kind of thing that just made me think that they're going to go down. Right. There wasn't a lot there.
Martin O'Neill, in the meantime, treating himself to a special first-class train ticket.
Yeah, I was on the train back with a couple of others and suddenly Martin O'Neill just walked right past us and then just strode into first class. It was only £5 top grade, but I don't think he would have been very happy to see us.
Did you upgrade, Jacob?
No.
Oh.
But he was holding...
You lost the news, didn't you?
Yeah. Well, I don't think he would have spoken...
No?
To us, no. But he was holding court with a load of Southampton fans. It looked like he was doing some kind of stand-up routine. He had them in...
Eating out of his hands.
Yeah, yeah.
Not literally. Although maybe, I don't know.
No, yeah, he got something from the buffet car. And,
there you go. Oh, no, bless. In other bottom-o-table news, Wigan lost to Arsenal.
Yeah, they did, and perhaps they shouldn't have, because I think it was a very questionable...
Was it a moral draw, do you
think? I think it was a very questionable penalty, and... If it hadn't been an English player, I think there'd be a lot more reaction about this. First of all, I never quite understood the whole thing that diving is such a diabolical crime. But at the same time, what I don't understand now, it seems to have swung so far the other way that the merest of contact is seen as some kind of entitlement for a striker to go down, which I think is completely wrong because it's not about contact, it's about being fouled.
Yep.
And if you're not being fouled, then you shouldn't go down and you don't have a right to go down. And
it's like basketball or something out there.
Yeah.
I didn't think there was a lot Bosejor could have done to stop touch. Because he did touch him, but not enough to make him go down. And it's like, where do you stand?
Very disappointing, I thought.
It's very clever to cut across. As a striker, you always want to cut across the player. But what we never saw in any of the coverage, certainly not on Saturday night, was a real slogan to see where that contact actually came from. Everyone was saying, well, it was contact, but you couldn't actually see where the contact came from, because it looked to me a little bit like Walcott is flicking up his leg and it's hitting Bosachor on the shin, which is not a foul. It's contact, but it's not a foul.
Right. So Walcott's got contact controversy as well as contract controversy at the moment. And moving on, Everton host Wigan on Boxing Day.
Oh dear.
Arsenal rest. Oh dear, what?
Contract controversy.
Yeah. 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 Arsenal rest because of that tube strike business. Hey, Sunderland, they got the win over Southampton. Newcastle, great weekend this for the North East, because Newcastle had that fine 1-0 win over QPR.
Yeah, a very nice goal from Shola Amiobi, who, he wasn't booed when he came on, but the fans weren't happy when Papiss Cisse, who's been pretty atrocious this season after his heroics last season with Newcastle, was taken off after in the second half, after about an hour or so. And he wasn't happy, he didn't shake Alan Pardew's hand, but, which was, you know, terrible sin. And but then they made up afterwards, and it's all fine. Shola Amiobi cut inside and lovely little finish into the far corner.
Mm.
And afterwards, Harry Redknapp was very upset with a few of his players.
He was upset with a few of his players, and indeed an entire philosophy and a pervading willingness to overspend and overreward.
I know that's
talents.
Just very very un-Redknapp, isn't it? He doesn't like to overspend. And doesn't like big
there
contracts.
Are a lot of players at this club who earn far too much money for what they are. I don't really want to see owners, etc., etc., etc. You shouldn't be paying massive wages when you've got a stadium which holds 18,000 people. If you've got, say, what, 22,000, what was Fratton Park, then it's fine. Just run the club into the ground. No problem. Does this mean they won't be getting an Elka then?
I reckon he'll still get money. He wouldn't have gone there if he's not going to be given money.
He's a terrific player. Terrific.
Right. A top player. All right.
But two points, I think, about this game. One, I think there is a reason why these strikers look a little bit lost for Newcastle, because the width seems to have gone out of the game. They're playing much more narrow, a much narrower system. And these are strikers, certainly Cisse, thrive on crosses, thrive on being real target men. If you're getting pushed out wide right, which seems to be happening a lot this year, he's not the right player for that. He's an orthodox number nine. Kind of Ron Seal kind of guy. The thing about QPR and the wages is, there was actually a really good point made by our friend Alan Shearer in one of today's papers, who said, who was speculating that the amount of wages now paid at lower clubs or even mid-table clubs is such that a lot of players just are not really properly motivated, because they know, you know, we're going to finish mid-table. It doesn't really matter if we're going to win this game or that one, we will the next one. And I think that's actually true.
Mm.
I think there is a real danger of the league eating itself to a certain extent by rewarding a lot of mediocrity.
Mm. Well, in that sense, we can all agree with what Harry was saying. It's just perhaps a little bit ironic coming from him. But his story of Joseph Bosingwa not bothering to be a sub and just deciding to go home instead and thus getting fined £130.
He's clever, though, because he knows that Bosingwa isn't very good in the first place and that he's on big wages. But also, he's come from Chelsea, so QPR fans don't like him anyway.
Right.
So it's just an easy scapegoat, isn't it?
Right. And it's an interesting thing to do, target one of your players, who you might need between here and the end of the...
You won't need him.
You won't need him?
No. I think he said he'll be off, but I think he'll be off in January.
Right, okay. But it's not going to foster much team spirit.
If they can get rid of him.
Who's going to pick him up for £130?
Right, but he won't be picking him. And he's got a couple of other players who can play there instead.
He's going to sit out his contract, be the happiest non-playing player ever.
Mm. Well, as happy as Winston Bogard, but...
Right. Had to go and bring him up, didn't you? Now, West Brom beat Norwich, ending an extraordinary 10-game unbeaten streak by the Canaries. Good Lukaku goal. And then some very sensible, mature words from the youngster afterwards. That was nice to see, about whether he might be going back to Chelsea in the window. He says he doesn't want to. Everton won at West Ham. Oh, Jacob, I bet you're still fuming over the refereeing decisions in this one. But then, so were Everton.
They were, but West Ham always lose to Everton, so I wasn't that surprised.
It was an astonishing bit of refereeing, wasn't it?
It was crazy, but the Everton goal was the disallowed goal was ridiculous as well. There was nothing wrong with that at all.
Well, it was a little bit wrong with it. It was a little bit.
Didn't do a lot, did he? And, when Gary Neville's doing his Monday night thing, he's always saying that the goalkeepers just push him out of the way. And when he was analysing Manchester United's diabolical defending against Reading, when they conceded all those goals from the crosses, he was saying, just get him out and dominate your six-yard box. And Jaskalainen wasn't doing that. He let Anichi do what he wanted there. And then, yeah, it was 1-1, and then Carlton Cole was sent off for nothing. I know it was awkward, and he caught Baines, but Baines was straight up, and as with the Gibson red card, you only need to look at the reaction of the opposition players that they were all aghast that they were sent off.
Mm. Yep.
So well. Allardyce was saying though afterwards that he thinks there should be challenges. You should have 2 or 3 challenges to contest refereeing decisions.
It's an interesting
thought.
He wants
to turn it into, and he was having a go at UEFA apparently, and saying with all the technology and the money in the game, the managers should be able to challenge bad decisions. And he's talking about fouls and not just, you know, goal line decisions. And
that could really work, couldn't it? Well, football, have the game stopped from time to time.
Yeah, he said it'll take 2 or 3 minutes. But how long's the game going to be?
Mm. One last game to mention from the weekend. It is Liverpool putting 4 past Fulham. Does this count? Have Fulham just become actually really rubbish of late without anybody really taking too much notice of it?
Yeah, but it's never stopped Liverpool not winning before.
Right, so fair point.
I would say it does count.
Right.
And it's a very, very convincing performance. But I also did notice that Fulham's defensive shape was non-existent. And, you know, I've always had misgivings about Martignolle. I think he's a lovely guy, but perhaps not this great, wonderful manager that people think he is. And I think you see it in these kind of games where there's just absolutely no organisation whatsoever from Fulham, especially away from home when they don't get a bit of euphoria and a bit of belief from their own side. They just look so open and not very good at all.
18 months, 83 shots. Stuart Downing scores his first goal.
Yeah, and Schwarzer should have saved it as well. It was straight at him. Poor old Downing. I'm not even giving praise now.
But also, but better than his first assist in 45 appearances.
When Liverpool came to Upton Park, I thought he was one of their most dangerous players a couple of weeks ago, and I was quite impressed with him. He was saying that he's had just this kick up the backside with Rodgers saying you can leave, and that's kind of spurred him on. I don't know where it's been for the last 18 months or so, but he's not a terrible player. He's just, at times, I think he's just a bit of a coward and he doesn't use his talent enough. I don't mean a coward physically. I mean, I think he hides in games.
Mm.
I mean, the pass for the Stevie Gerrard goal was absolutely sublime. And I was watching with someone, I can't remember who with, but I did ask him who gave that pass, and they said Downing to me, and I was convinced that they're having a sort of practical joke on me.
Yeah.
But it was sublime.
All right, then. Liverpool, on Boxing Day, and another of those top mouth-watering fixtures, are going to be at Stoke, who held Spurs, I think we mentioned, to a 0-0 draw. Andre Villas-Boas calling them the best defence in Europe, which is technically not true, because let me get this straight, Malaga, Juventus, and I think Bayern Munich as well have all conceded fewer goals than Stoke. Oh, Paris Saint-Germain as well. But that's in France, so that really doesn't count. Anyway.
Fifth best defence in Europe.
Yeah, still pretty good, isn't it? Well done, Stoke. Tell you what, that's the end of part two. Well, little pre-Christmas treat for us now, as joining us on the line from Madrid is Sid Lowe. Feliz Navidad, Sid.
Feliz Navidad. Da, 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 da. I mean, if you think that Christmas songs are bad, that one drives you absolutely crazy.
I want to wish you a Merry Christmas.
Da, 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 da. I actually saw a Karim Benzema version of that, which genuinely made me laugh the other day. Karim Benzema. Da, 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 Karim Benzema. Da, da, da.
Is it
but it
true?
Had like little kind of dancing cartoon Karim Benzema's, and then Mourinho did the core stuff.
Ka-ching. Sid, Apocalypse Moo, discuss.
Discuss? Crikey, where do we start?
Where?
This weekend, he left Iker Casillas out the starting lineup against Malaga after the game, said it was a purely technical decision. Which, of course, is nonsense.
Well, Sid, keepers get dropped all the time. I mean, we've seen Andre Villas-Boas switch and change. We've seen Sir Alex do it as well. Why is Casillas?
Keepers get dropped all the time, but not keepers who are the club captain, not keepers who are World Cup winning goalkeeper with Spain. Those two things actually are part of what a lot of the media is talking about here. But I actually think those two things are the least important, because as you say, a keeper gets dropped. If he's not playing well enough, he gets dropped. Now, the people who are supporting Mourinho say that Casillas has played badly enough this season to have got dropped. I disagree with them, not least because the guy that was putting in his place, Antonio Dan, is not as good. I mean, it's as simple as that. He's not as good. But the real reason, of course, that this is so significant is because it's a response to everything that's been happening over the last, I mean, I'd go more than just this year, over the last 18 months or so, and the tension between Casillas and Mourinho. And I think this was a very definite kind of public outing of Casillas by Mourinho, but I think it's one that doesn't do him any favours. And it feels almost reckless the way that Mourinho did it. And certainly this, I think, is another glimpse of the fact that the problems in the dressing room are really quite serious.
Mm. Well, it seems that the problems have become, as you say, extremely public. You've got the papers and the president very much on Casillas' side, and a move largely on his own on the other. Is that right?
Yeah, what he has got, though, is a strand of Madrid supporters who've kind of redefined themselves as Mourinistas rather than Madridistas. And they support him all the way. They see him as being a victim of a media campaign over the last, I mean, I don't know if they would claim all 3 years that he's been at the club, but certainly over the last year or so. I think there's a certain element of truth in that some of what Mourinho has done has been taken as always being bad, even when it's not. And there has been, I think, a degree of enjoyment taken in attacking him at times, but that doesn't remove the fundamentals, which is that internally the relationship is very, very tense indeed. There's been things that Mourinho has done that some of the players don't like. The dressing room is not united, and it's genuinely problematic. Obviously, last week we saw that, well, we didn't see it, but we heard it, the confrontation between Mourinho and a Radio Marca journalist called Anton Miana. And just the whole thing has been, to be honest, at times it's been pretty deeply unpleasant.
Mm. Perhaps the biggest problem, though, for Mou is that with all of this, he's not winning anymore. And then,
well, I think this is the bottom line, James. That that Mourinho has one discourse as manager, and that is I win. And so, you know, if you start to try and debate, well, yeah, you win, but how about the time when you were lucky that so-and-so got sent off, or the time when this happened or that happened? It's always, no, there is no debate. It's an objective fact. I win. Now, of course, that discourse is fine until you're not winning. Mm. And when you're not winning, you've got nothing to fall back on. And the reality is what it is. However much Mourinho, and at the weekend he timidly, kind of threw out there that there's some funny things have happened in games, in other words, talking about refereeing decisions, which frankly I think is just not true, talking about things going slightly against him, which sort of is true. Madrid have hit the post more than anyone else, but the reality is, look at the table, they're 16 points behind Barcelona, and they're not very good this year, Real Madrid. They're considering the level of squad they've got, considering their huge success last year when they won the league with over 100 points, sorry, with 100 points for the first time a team had ever done that. This year, they're just not a good side.
So they lost 3-2 against Malaga. Would they have lost with Casillas? Would he have stopped those goals?
Right, well, this is the other thing. When the decision was made, the decision, it seems, was made earlier in the week because it seems to have been building, but when it was found out about an hour and a half before kickoff, it was immediately obvious. I think anyone with half a brain could see that no matter what happened, it was going to be judged in the context of Casillas. So it would have been, Madrid win, Casillas. Madrid lose, Casillas. You know, whatever happened, it was going to be reduced to the Casillas issue. And as you say, did they lose because of Casillas not being there? I personally don't think Adam was at fault for any of the goals, although I've got a very slight doubt about his positioning on the third because it is a near post, but I still think it's a brilliant finish. I also think the fact that Madrid lost 3-2 is the best thing that Madrid could say about the game. They had a reasonably good first half, but in the second half, Malaga were far, far better than them. I don't think it's about the goalkeeper. And this is the other thing, is that the collateral damage is the damage it might do to Adam. Because Adan's now suddenly found himself in the middle of this storm, which presumably is not what he wanted. Presumably he didn't want his big league debut for Real Madrid to be basically tinged with sort of, I hate to sound all kind of, new age on you, but tinged with such kind of negative vibrations. And it must have been pretty difficult for him as well.
Absolutely. See, Jacob?
The most striking image I have of Mourinho is when he, after the Champions League in 2010, when he was with Materazzi and they're both crying because he's leaving, and he's always had this amazing connection with players, but why do you think it's that he hasn't been able to foster that same kind of relationship at Real Madrid with any of the players?
Well, I mean, very quickly on Materazzi, there was an interview with Rafa Benitez on Spanish radio station Onda Cero this week, and he was asked about Materazzi because Materazzi had slaughtered Benitez post-Mourinho. And Benitez said, well, anyone who knows anything about Materazzi will know exactly why. And I think that perhaps has to be read into that embrace of Mourinho. But there's no doubt that the embrace was genuine. Why is Mourinho different? I think one of the amazing things about what's happened to Mourinho at Real Madrid is that, maybe I'm wrong, maybe you can think of some other things, but it seems to me there are two things that Mourinho has so successfully did, certainly in England, and to some extent it seems in Italy, although I think less so in Italy, is that he seemed to create a very good relationship with his players, and was very, very good at handling the media, very good at manipulating the media. Well, in Spain, he's completely failed to do those two things. Those are the two things that, more than anything else, certainly in England, he was very, very good at. I think there's one very simple reason, and this is perhaps a bit too simplistic, but the one very simple reason why the Madrid dressing room is different. Real Madrid dressing room's got World Cup winners in it, and it's got World Cup winners in it playing a very different style with a very different kind of, if you like, daily coexistence, much calmer, much more relaxed, coexisting with Barcelona players who then Mourinho wants them to confront and to be conflictive with. And I think from the very, very start, that means he's walking into a different dressing room. You walk into a dressing room with Lampard and Terry and so on, and you say, do it this way and we'll win things, and of course you start to win. Those players think, wow, this is brilliant. And by definition, I think, just as a natural reaction, British players, I think, tend to follow their manager much more closely than Spanish players. Spanish players are much more adept at turning against him, and as the Spanish phrase goes, making the bed for him. I suspect that something similar, although I don't know enough about Inter, happened at Inter with a team that had won the European Cup for 50 years. But you go into a Real Madrid dressing room and you say, we're not doing things this way, we're going to do it the other way. And say, well, we just won the World Cup doing it this way.
Sid, what are the consequences of this? Is it really true that we might not even see him in February when it comes to the United games?
I think it's plausible. I honestly don't know if it would be true or not. What I do know from conversations with a few people is that Florentino Perez is genuinely annoyed with what's happened. Has at times, at least. I mean, you know, when the comments are made, you don't know to what extent they're made as something that's been thought through, and to what extent it's just a reaction to an immediate situation. But has on occasions expressed real irritation with the way that things have gone, and the way that Mourinho and others have behaved. I think sacking is a possibility, but of course, bear in mind that sacking means paying him off, and not sacking him means not paying him off. And there's a little bit of me that suspects, and this is no more than a guess, there's a little bit of me that suspects that Mourinho is kind of deliberately provoking now. But in a funny sort of way, maybe Mourinho would almost quite like to be sacked.
You know what, Sid? We can't leave this topic without A, saying well done to Malaga.
The team
of the season for many people. And B, is it true they've now been banned from Europe next season? And is there any chance of appealing that?
Well, they are going to appeal. They're going to appeal to the Court of Arbitration and Sport. They think that, curiously enough, appealing to the Court of Arbitration and Sport, they consider the ban to be arbitrary. They think that it's unfair because UEFA are saying that they owe people in the game money, namely Osasuna and Villarreal. Well, Osasuna publicly have said they've had their money from Malaga, that they haven't got a problem with them. Malaga do still owe the taxman money, but they're negotiating that. And Malaga believes, and the last time I had a conversation with someone at Malaga was not that long ago, but it was before the ban, and they believe that UEFA had a problem with them, but they knew it was resolvable and they were dealing with it, and that the first step was to make sure that Spanish inland revenue was happy, and then everything would fall into place from there. And they'd been genuinely surprised by this ban, because it's come at a time that they weren't expecting. It's become with a seriousness in terms of the sanction that they weren't expecting, a year to be held over four possible years. And, you know, the bottom line is they're now in a Champions League place that at the moment they can't occupy it. They think it's unfair. What UEFA have done, curiously enough, though, is lift the embargo on the money they've made from this year's Champions League, which I think is around about 17.5 million euros.
Right, so that should help them sort out their other issues.
Yeah, but of course, if in the meantime they can't get them to change the ban for next year, it doesn't help them very much.
No, that's true. Mm. And Leo Messi signed off with another goal.
Yeah, just one. Useless.
Yeah. So what's that for the year?
91. 90. Or 90 if you read marker.
Okay, marvellous. Brilliant. Sid, many thanks for this and all your reports throughout 2012. Have yourself a lovely Christmas. Yeah, you still there?
Yeah,
good,
I'm you none of your phrases seem to have this finality, so I'm waiting for you to finish before I butt in very rudely.
No, and then a lovely new year in which we hope to have more of your top insight into the Spanish game and beyond.
Fantastic. I will speak to you then. In the meantime, have a Karim Benzema, everybody.
Oh, merci. Thanks, Sid.
Au revoir.
Right, the very pan-European Sid Lowe there. Here's a post. Dublin Roo, Maradona to manage Iraq. What could possibly go wrong? Hang on, is Maradona, is he now the manager of Iraq?
Yes.
My word. My word. When did they make that official?
2 weeks ago.
Really?
He couldn't quite get the Ukraine job, so...
That's amazing, Iraq. Isn't it? Johnny Late says, regarding Dennis Beavis Bergkamp, I might be misremembered because we were talking about the fact that Nicola Berti was calling Bergkamp Beavis. He says, Johnny Lay, I might be misremembering this, but I'm sure When Saturday Comes or similar had a cover with Bergkamp as Beavis and Butthead portrayed by David Platt. I've had a quick trawl through the interverse, but I haven't found concrete evidence. Maybe I made it up. If you had, Johnny Lay, you had a stroke of genius. Now, all that remains to do for this not final pod of 2012 is have a quick mention of a terrific game in Italy, where, of course, Juventus are now 8 points clear. A month ago, they were 2 points clear of Napoli. But Napoli getting a points deduction, Inter falling apart in this post-Wesley Snyder mess they've got themselves into, means that they are now 8 points clear of the second-place side, who are now Lazio, who had a victory at the weekend against Sampdoria. But the really big story of the weekend was Roma-Milan, an absolutely huge tonking, creaming, with the other steamrolling of Milan.
Thrilling.
Yeah.
Ah, so.
No, of the Rossoneri by Zeman's Roma. Some of the papers harking back to one of his most famous wins of the first Zemanlandia era in the capital, which was a 5-0 win he had in 98 over Fabio Capello's Milan, which was especially sweet for so many people there. But this one obviously was a narrower scoreline, 4-2, but the way they took them apart in the first half, and a lot of people commenting, watching Roma, watching Lamela and Totti, didn't even have that great a game. It was really Lamela who ran this show. Really just running rings around the Rossoneri's bewildered back line, wondering what it's going to be like when Barcelona take them on in the Champions League. Quite entertaining. Very, very, very possibly. There you go. So, as I say, quick mention for that. Was a terrific game. One of the games of the season, I would say, so far. And Roma back up there to sixth place. Very much in contention. They're only 3 points off the top three. You know, so, hey, Champions Leagues? Maybe. Maybe. Milan, 5 points behind them in seventh, since you didn't ask, Jacob. Anyway, they've gone off on their winter break. French gone off on their winter break with that three-way tie atop Lyon, Paris Saint-Germain, Marseille. Bundesliga on the winter break. It's funny though, Rafa, isn't it? Bayern Munich, they've sewn that one up, haven't they? What's the points difference there?
Well, they're 9 points clear of Leverkusen, who are not properly the biggest rivals anyway.
So that points. Would be Dortmund?
Yeah, 12 points ahead of Dortmund.
12.
So it does look like they will win this one.
You got the Bundesliga looks pretty sewn up. Serie A, Juve 8 points clear, looks pretty sewn up. Barcelona, 16 clear of Real Madrid. And how many points clear? We don't know how many clear there are of Atletico Madrid, who now stand a really good chance of finishing above Real Madrid in the standings. Fine. So it's kind of unusual for three major leagues, and forgive me if I include Serie A in that, to be so
and the best
done and dusted
in the world
at this point.
Is still rocking and rolling.
Still rocking and rolling. Oh, right, that Barcelona stat, they're 9 points clear of Atletico. Well, interesting. We'll be watching French football come April, May. Good. Anyway, that's it for today's podcast. Many thanks to producer Ben and to Jacob Steinberg and to Raphael Honigstein and you, listener, for taking a bit of your little Christmas build-up and setting it aside for us. We'll be back on Thursday with the Football Weekly Extra, when I'll be joined in the studio by Barry Glendening and Jacob Steinberg. So, until then, from all of us here, it's many, many happy holidays, and we'll speak to you on Thursday. Karim Benzema. Karim Benzema. Karim Benzema, Karim Benzema.